Did you know that kinky wellness is integral to your self-development? Hi, welcome to The Partition, home of kinky wellness, the ultimate destination to explore the integral connection between kinky wellness and your personal development. I'm your host and kinky wellness coach, Dana Shergill, and each Monday I bring on a special guest to dive into specific aspects of kinky wellness. From unconventional practices to thought-provoking conversations, I'm here to break down barriers and redefine the boundaries of wellness and pleasure. Don't forget to join me for my solo shows on Wednesdays, where I explore even further into the multifaceted layers of kinky wellness. So let's strip away the shame and taboo together and have an open conversation about it. Hey, and welcome back. Today we are with registered massage therapist, Mark Dwyer. Mark has been an RMT for over 10 years, and with all his knowledge, he is on the show to talk to us about the vagus nerve. This nerve is a nerve we need to know, and today we're going to find out what it is, where it is, why it's so important, and how we can heal and help it. So let's jump right into it and welcome Mark to the show. Hello and welcome to the show, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Happy to be here, Dana.
Yes. Well, today we're talking about all about the vagus nerve. So if you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit about what that is and what you do with the vagus nerve. And yeah, we can start there.
Okay. Yeah. The vagus nerve is, it's the longest of the cranial nerves. So the nerves in the head, it's the longest of one of those. And there are 10 of those in total, but this one actually regulates so many automatic systems in the body that you might have heard about, you know, other podcasts, other YouTubers, other influencers talking about how to stimulate the vagus nerve or vagus nerve stimulation therapy. It's gone pretty viral, and it's been doing that for, you know, a few years now, maybe 10 to 20 years. And if you go on PubMed, you can see some of this flood of autonomic nervous system research. The vagus nerve is the primary nerve that energizes the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's the nervous system that's in charge of our fertility, our arousal, digestion, sleep, healing, immunity, inflammation, muscle tone, blood pressure. There's a few others, but you kind of get the picture. It's the most important nerve in terms of how we self-regulate and how we come out of stress and relax.
Wow, it sounds like everything is connected to this pretty much.
It does sound like that. It can be overwhelming, and it's a rabbit hole worth going down, especially any therapist, anybody who's interested in, you know, sexual play, reproduction. Those functions are autonomic. They're automatic in the body. We don't choose arousal. We don't choose fertility. It's a byproduct of healthy autonomic nervous system function, and the vagus nerve is the superhighway for the self-healing branch of that nervous system that controls our fertility.
So how would you be able to, is there key signs if something's wrong with it that we would see in our body, or is that something that we would need to go to a doctor for?
Well, you don't need a doctor to self to get an opinion on yourself or to interpret symptoms that you might have. If you have any symptoms like difficulty sleeping, difficulty relaxing, slow wound healing, poor digestion, all of these symptoms would come as a result of imbalance in your autonomic nervous system. And usually that is too much stress, not enough relaxation. The stress branch of our autonomic nervous system is overstimulated in our culture in this day and age, and we don't get enough downtime or relaxation time where those stress hormones can come down, and the endorphins, the corresponding hormones that lead to relaxation and better digestion and better sleep, more normal arousal and fertility, more normal wound healing and immunity, those are all controlled by hormones in our body. If we don't have access to relaxation because the vagus nerve is underactive or not stimulated often enough, then we'll have symptoms in those functions. So anybody who has difficulty sleeping and poor digestion, they know it. And they might start to realize over the years, certain things go hand in hand with that, and certain things help them out and help them sleep better and help them get better digestion. And one of the ways you can do that, one of the ways to improve all of those functions is to learn self-stimulation of the vagus nerve. That's what I do in my practice as an RMT. I help stimulate the vagus nerve. I help turn down the stress level so that the vagus nerve can stay active more often. And that's what leads to better self-healing for anyone's clients. I happen to be in rehab. So I'm helping people's self-healing systems stay on more often between treatments by using the vagus nerve and what I know about it.
So I feel like vagus nerve is very important, but I haven't heard too much about it for some reason when it comes to this. So it's quite interesting how important this is and how many things are connected to it.
It's vitally important. If you're interested in longevity or performance or quality of life, and you do just a little research into the autonomic nervous system or self-healing, or just put in vagus nerve into PubMed or YouTube, just start watching lectures, watching free content. You'll quickly realize how much information is just sitting there, just at your fingertips. But, you know, most of us are distracted by our jobs and our favorite outlets. And, we're in our little ruts and we all have our little blind spots. And don't feel alone, because the mainstream healthcare system has a blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
Has many blind spots. But this information happens to be, in my opinion, so far still in the blind spot of the mainstream healthcare system. If you want to help somebody heal themselves and you don't help them reduce their own stress so that their vagus nerve can energize and activate their parasympathetic nervous system, they won't heal quickly or efficiently. They'll remain stressed. They'll continue sleeping poorly, possibly with poor digestion and poor markers in the other functions that the vagus nerve controls.
Yes, and so you say that we can stimulate it, and is it just predominantly just reducing your stress levels at home, or is there other ways that you can stimulate your vagus nerve?
Your vagus nerve will become more stimulated more often on its own if you do those things. Your body and your nervous system happens to have the capacity for self-stimulation. But if there's so much stress or there's so much chronic pain that you don't get relaxation often enough, people can slip into a condition called sympathetic upregulation. And it's just like, imagine someone put a brick on your gas pedal, but you still have to commute. So people tend to live in this kind of baseline level of high elevated stress hormones, and we just get used to it. We're all used to it. It happens to me too. But nowadays, more and more biohackers, more and more healers, more and more influencers, they're discovering that you can learn little tricks to stimulate that vagus nerve without changing your lifestyle yet. Maybe you haven't figured out how to feel more relaxed more often. Maybe when you try to meditate, it's frustrating for you and it just doesn't work. There are little tricks to bypass that condition that you can be in. For example, I just learned on last weekend at a workshop, if you press your eyeballs gently but firmly, take a few breaths, you leave it there for 20 to 30 seconds, your vagus nerve gets energized. Yeah, that's not the most practical way to go through your life, is pressing your eyeballs whenever you feel stressed out, but that will help. There are also reflexology points people can learn on their body, and stimulating them with your finger and your thumb or a pencil can do that. Acupuncture points can do that. I use devices that locate the acupoints and that reset the electrical activity there and help reset the autonomic nervous system while it's happening. So the stress hormones start to drop off and the other hormones start to kick on, because the vagus nerve is activating, because the opposite branch of the nervous system, the stress system, is being suppressed. So it's valuable to learn ways to improve your stress level in your life. It's also valuable to learn ways to interrupt it, maybe when you're not having a perfect week at managing your stress. Maybe managing your stress in deadline week is not possible. There's other ways to help yourself, and it's really a rabbit hole worth going down for anybody who's interested in feeling better, having better immunity, feeling more relaxed more often.
Well, you mentioned that it's very connected to our pleasure. And would you be able to expand a little bit more on that as well?
Sure. Yeah, it's so sexual arousal is regulated by the vagus nerve and the autonomic nervous system. People might think that the stress system might be involved with getting aroused, because maybe when we think of being aroused, our breath, our respiration rate might increase a little bit. You know, our body temperature might fluctuate a little bit. Blood pressure fluctuates a little bit. But ironically, it's the relaxation branch of that automatic autonomic nervous system inside of us that allows us to feel arousal. If that system cannot activate because of chronic stress or pain, you may feel a reduced sex drive. You may feel less sexual. You may feel less pleasure until something corrects that balance in your internal stress system. That autonomic nervous system balance is called autonomic tone. Now, autonomic tone is when you can easily switch back and forth between these two branches of the autonomic system. They should take turns in our life. We need that stress response. But when it's chronic, it interrupts the other half of our nervous system, which happens to involve everything we talked about, digestion and arousal, fertility, self-healing, blood pressure, muscle tightness in our body. It's all controlled automatically for us by one half of that system. So to become aroused, we need to be able to activate that relaxation branch of our autonomic system. Now, to enjoy arousal and to achieve orgasm, you need the sympathetic nervous system to reactivate and get active and stay that way. And you need to be able to access both, or you will have either a lack or a difficulty being aroused, or a lack or a difficulty achieving orgasm. That autonomic nervous system regulates both of those functions. So that's why it's important for anyone involved in sexual therapy, sexual health, kink, sexual expression of all kinds,
to really understand the importance of all of these systems. And I think that that's something that, because we have this baseline of our stress levels are so high, I think people have thought that maybe that's their normal, I guess, and that they don't think anything's wrong with them.
Exactly what happens. So that when you learn, you know, basic anatomy, physiology, and biology, you learn about attenuation or habituation, right? So if something becomes constant, we normalize it. It's literally our nervous system will stop paying attention to it. And you might forget that there's a background noise in your car, you know, when you hit a certain speed. But then, you know, something might make you conscious of it all of a sudden, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get that checked out by the mechanic or whatever. If something is happening constant, regular enough, our nervous system attenuates to it and stops spending energy interpreting it, just blocks it out. So that's what happens if our stress levels become high enough, often enough. We get used to that. We start to, you know, adapt to that. It's called habituation or attenuation. And we take it for granted that that's how we're supposed to be. And usually it's not a problem until, you know, the second half of life. And then it can sometimes be too late to fix some of the side effects of chronic stress by then. Often people end up being medicated to kind of control those parameters, like high, constant, elevated blood pressure. So maybe instead of assuming that we're lacking a medication, we might be lacking stress management techniques and coping mechanisms and awareness of some of the triggers that are changeable in our life that are keeping us highly stressed. Some of these things are changeable. Over time, it's helpful to learn them, but it's also helpful to have little tricks and hacks to be able to bring yourself out of it temporarily, just so you can finish your Tuesday and then, you know, get on with your self-actualization project on the weekend when you have time, and where you can really make long-term changes and think about that.
Well, even something as simple like what you mentioned with your example of putting your light pressure on your eyes, it's That I feel like that's fairly easy that someone could introduce into their day to day.
But it's very easy, and it's just one little example. It's just the most recent one that I wasn't familiar with that I happened to learn at a workshop. But there are dozens, if not more, simple little things that people can learn. There's another thing just popped into my head is there's a little ring that they started. I learned about them about 5 to 10 years ago. It's like a soft ring. It's like a bunch of springs all interconnected, and you can roll it up and down your finger. And it stimulates your finger, all these little pressure points and nerve endings in our fingers. And that causes a reflexive autonomic adjustment, increases relaxation hormones, and it decreases stress hormones. Those rings are maybe $1 or $2 each. But if you try to put a price on your ability to self-regulate your autonomic nervous system, you realize that's nothing. And you should have one or two or three, and have one in your purse, have one in your pocket, have one in your car. And, you know, why wouldn't we surround ourselves with these little tricks if we understood, you know, the potential importance of self-regulation more often?
And especially because we do live in this very, very stressful environment of getting up, going to work. Maybe you don't, most of us don't like our jobs. It always seems like that's the case. And that alone can be stressful.
Most of us go to bed in high stress. Most of us wake up to high stress and cope. And that's the reality. And I think that's one of the reasons that yoga went viral 20, 30 years ago when it did. And now there's yoga studios everywhere. There's like as many yoga studios as Tim Hortons. And I think that's great. It's like a little sign of a positive revolution. We just need more of that. We need more people sharing the simple information. That's some of it's ancient. Acupuncture's 10,000 years old, arguably, or more. Reflexology may be older. These are not secrets. No, it's not new. We're bathed in stress, and we are assuming it's normal. And we're not aware of the tricks, the little tips to make the best of it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is one of the information bits that caught my attention when I met you, which was at the Taboo show, was how when you're C-section, when some women, when they have C-sections, they can cut through the vagus nerve. And I believe, like, I know lots of women that have had that. And I wish, would you be able to expand on that? Because I really do think that that information needs to go out more.
Yeah, the influence of scar tissue on that autonomic nervous system is profound. And it's unrecognized by the mainstream healthcare system, in my opinion. For example, as far as I'm aware, in Japan, they did or they still do perform C-section incisions vertically instead of laterally across the abdomen. They do it vertically. Because if you think about how we're built and what's just under the skin there, there's the abdominal wall, there's a major plexus of nerves in the abdomen and lower in the gut, enteric plexus, the sacral plexus. It's not a good idea to cut across because there's a whole bunch of little wires and vessels, including, you know, blood vessels and lymphatic vessels, and the muscle is oriented vertically. It's much less invasive to cut vertically into the abdomen to remove a baby. So that's why the Japanese did it that way. I don't know why North American doctors and doctors elsewhere don't do that, but or give the woman a choice or ask if they're aware that there's options. But that's just an example. Regardless, after an incision, after a wound, there is scar tissue left over. That scar tissue is relatively inflexible. It's relatively irritable to pressure and much more likely to send pain signals to the brain. It's electrically non-conductive, and it blocks passage of blood flow to local blood vessels and lymphatic flow. Those reasons alone are enough for, you know, the system to kind of re-examine and think how can we help women or anyone who goes through a surgery, how can we help them have a better outcome? by considering how disruptive scar tissue is under the skin after the procedure, after we've confirmed that the person is alive and ready to go home. But there's no attention paid to scar tissue. It's considered an afterthought, and that, you know, if the surgical objective is achieved and the person is stable, you send them home and you're welcome. But some people aren't that lucky, and they may have chronic pain in the low back or in the neck, the shoulders, from that incision and the residual scar tissue from that is changeable. But there are, you know, laser techniques can help change that. This device that I use has a setting for scar tissue, and it very gently repolarizes the scar tissue under the skin. It can take 10 to 15 to 20 minutes, depending on how long the scar is. But if, you know, if people were to use that after any procedure, they would get much better wound healing results. They would get much better tissue excursion or tissue movement there, which leaves us more flexible than otherwise. Because an incision in the skin, even on the surface, translates deep under, and that can tie up muscles that are passing through there. So the C-section scar might increase the tension in the psoas muscle, or that major hip flexor muscle. That's directly tied in to your survival reflex. If you have a C-section scar and it doesn't heal perfectly, and maybe you were a little bit too tight and not in perfect shape before it all started, you might come out of that with tension locked into your abdomen that you can not get out. That might translate later to chronic low back pain. And trying to fix it later is not as efficient as helping the person, you know, while it's happening, or identifying people who are likely to not have a perfect outcome. Athletes tend to have great outcomes from surgeries. Civilians, it's not as, you know, not as consistent.
Wow, I am actually shocked by a lot of the comments that you said, but in the same breath, when it comes to our health system out here, my listeners know that I'm not a total huge fan of it. So in a way, I'm almost not shocked, because that's crazy that we don't even give the option out. And to know that you could have pain in your neck or in your shoulders for something like this, it just goes to show how everything is very much connected within our body.
It's very much connected. If you are close to your limit of chronic stress before a C-section, you're probably going to be there or higher after the C-section. And to just pretend that it has no effect just because the wound closed and it didn't get infected and they can walk, and doesn't mean that the healthcare job is over. But too often, the way I see it, we're not focusing on healthcare all the time. I think it's important to just realize that, and until we fix the system, take some responsibility for ourselves and learn what's learnable and what's easy out there, what's ancient out there, and use it.
Well, I follow said guru, and I remember a quote that he said, and he said, modern medicine will take ancient things like this and then call it new science in about 20, 30 years. And yes, it kind of made me laugh, because that's the reality of what's happening right here in the West.
Yep, it is. It's often, it'll be repackaged and resold and regurgitated. But that's okay. I'm okay with that. if more good is happening than harm, I'm okay with that. We just have so many disempowered people that could have much better outcomes, much higher quality of life for very little time and money spent. And the whole healthcare system would be eased for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to our vagus nerve, it really does go from basically our entire body that it's connected to all elements.
It's the longest cranial nerve, and it does go from the lower abdomen, arguably right to the reproductive organs, right up to beyond the neck and in into the head.
With this information you learned, it's you're a registered massage therapist. And I'm wondering why this information doesn't really translate into other forms of healthcare.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I learned much of this in almost in passing as an RMT in massage school. So much of this awareness and clarity, I guess, the clarity I gained from attending workshops from a company called the Center for Pain and Stress Research. It's now primarily a research body, and they are publishing studies on the vagus nerve and pain to try to expand our awareness and to build on our ability to manage pain and reduce stress in the body to facilitate self-healing. So I've learned much of what I'm discussing with you today, and I'd say 80% of what I know that that led to our chat and led to this invitation is learned from the Center for Pain and Stress Research. The headquarters of them are in Etobicoke on the lakeshore, just outside Toronto.
Oh, wow.
But that the unit that they make, which is a neurostim device, it's a point finder. And you do this, you turn it on, there's a little light there. So if I put this on my hand, I don't know if you can hear that.
Yeah.
When the sound is very high pitched and that little light is out, I'm all backwards here. I press the button and I'm basically doing electroacupuncture to myself with no needle. That doesn't feel good, but it doesn't penetrate the skin. So it's completely safe for home use. And if you learn a few acupoints, or if you use this passive stimulator, so I have an ear clip here. If I put this ear clip on, the other end of that wire is attached to this unit. And then I have a sticker on here. This wire connects to a sticker that's on my abdomen right now. And if I turn the unit on, I hear that pitch and I press this button. It's muted. Now you can't hear it, but it's on. So it's actually sending gentle current, normalizing current through my vagus nerve inside my body right now, because from here to my abdomen, the path of least resistance is the vagus nerve.
This oh, wow.
Current, the parameters of this current are proven many, many times in published studies, proven to regulate the autonomic nervous system. So I don't need to be a rocket scientist to do that and turn it on and press mute, put it in my pocket and like do this podcast or read a book, watch SportsCenter. I could do the dishes with it on. So it's one of the tools I use to self-regulate my nervous system, to prevent chronic stress burnout, and to keep my parasympathetic nervous system energized often enough that I don't burn out. I don't have any symptoms from stress or burnout.
Wow. So how accessible is one of these for someone to get a hold of?
It's an over-the-counter device, but it's medical grade, so it's not cheap. But it is pre-approved by most healthcare providers. If you have benefits or insurance, if you have so most people who have insurance coverage or health benefits, they can buy a TENS machine for self-care at home. This is just a specialized TENS machine. It uses a different current that doesn't go above the threshold for stressing out that sensitive autonomic nervous system. It keeps it calm. It only regulates it or normalizes it. It's a modulator. Whereas most TENS machines they're using an alternating current and it's a well above threshold. It can cause stress. It can cause muscles to fire and clench. You can see that sometimes when you put it on, you feel that you see the muscles jumping and activating on their own. That can help somebody get through rehab, but you don't want to be applying that much current to your nervous system frequently or on a regular basis. It's too much current.
Is it too much, or would someone be dependent on it, or what would be the downfall of that?
The downfall is that even though it's enough current to perhaps, hopefully, therapeutically interrupt a neuromuscular spasm, it might do that for you. It might reduce pain temporarily for you, but your autonomic nervous system feels overstimulated. It feels stressed, and that's counterproductive to self-healing.
Wow. So these are very like holistic things that you can do in your own home when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, it is holistic in that it's essentially acupuncture with some additional functions and this passive, safe, simple application. So yeah, these devices have changed my professional life and they've changed my personal life in terms of my health and my immunity, my ability to heal from minor injuries and stay, stay balanced.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, when it comes back to the vagus nerve, like, are there key concepts that you really want people to understand about it?
Well, I think we kind of covered it, but if, I kind of see the vagus nerve as metaphorically like the fountain of youth that we've all been looking for. It's, you know, when I first heard about the metaphor of the fountain of youth, I kind of thought maybe it's a geographical place we're all looking for. And then I realized as I got older and did more reading and stuff, it's a metaphor. It comes from within, and they might be talking about one of the glands in the body, and it might be the pineal gland, it might be the pituitary gland, it might be the several glands in the body. And I don't know about all that. I didn't get to the bottom of that riddle, but I do see the vagus nerve and the autonomic nervous system, the two halves of which are the stress system and the relaxation system. The relaxation system turning on often enough is the fountain of youth because it regulates self-healing, regulates tissue healing in our body. That's essentially all we're doing. As we go through life and we experience stress and we take on little injuries and we accumulate little scars and patches of scar tissue, if we can maintain our ability to self-heal all the time, indefinitely, we will age very gracefully and slowly. If we don't, if we cannot initiate self-healing, these things will add up faster and our quality of life will drop and it'll be measurable in diagnosable disease.
Well, what I find interesting is that scars really hold on to almost memory. Like they are there. And I do believe that we kind of overlook scars as, oh, no big deal, it's just a mark. But really there's a lot that can tie back into that.
Yes, there, so that you can imagine that just there, just as under the skin, there might be a little bit more tension from that scar to an adjacent muscle. And that might change the functioning of that muscle. And that muscle just controls a joint. You might get different joint function from a nearby scar. You might never put two and two together. But if you can change how much tension is locked into that scar, you might be able to release that joint. If you can imagine that instead of there being tensile stress left over from that scar, what if it's emotional stress? And it turns out the more research you do into this, the more real that actually is. And it's not imaginary. It's very real. There are emotional acupoints in the body that we might include in a treatment plan. If we're correcting someone's C-section scar, and say there were complications after and emotions of fear and anger dominated during that incident. After we're done the local scar release work, we're probably going to circuit that scar with those two emotional acupoints as part of their therapy. Believe it or not, that tends to get much better results than not doing that. Sometimes when we'll treat an acupoint on someone, they won't feel anything. They'll just feel like the gentle pressure of the tip of the device. Sometimes it feels like we're inserting a hot needle there, but the pressure isn't different. It's just the way that the electrical interference under the skin is causing pain receptors to tell the body that there's discomfort, there's a little pain there. Usually in real time, within 30 to 40 seconds, that sensation resolves.
Wow.
It goes away. That doesn't mean the therapy is done. That doesn't mean this person is reset forever. They might benefit from some manual work and stretches after that. I recommend yoga for everybody to keep ourselves flexible and stretchy enough. but sending the electrical current through the scar tissue and helping the body be looser, be less restricted, and have less electrical interference inside of ourselves helps the autonomic nervous system achieve self-regulation better.
Well, this is kind of, it reminds me a little bit about grounding, the whole concept of putting your feet on the ground and getting your excess energy out that way as well.
Dana, I'm grounding right now. I have.
Oh, really? Nice.
I have this.
Oh my gosh.
I have an ankle strap on, and that's on my ankle. I sleep with that as often as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I just got off the road and landed here and set up the laptop. And I thought, why don't I ground? And why don't I put this thing on? I don't do a lot of podcasts. I'm a little nervous. So
yeah, you're doing great.
anyone who will listen to these concepts and it, for whom it doesn't trigger their aluminum hat kind of reflex, I encourage, if you're interested, if you heard of grounding, I encourage you to learn a little bit about it and just do it. If you've heard of vagus nerve stimulation, I encourage you to follow the rabbit hole and start experimenting with it. Nothing bad can happen from this. It's the fountain of youth. It's the secret to being resilient, to coping with stress well, and to healing well and having high immunity, having better blood pressure, having better digestion, having better sleep. There is no downside to learning about it or experimenting with it.
No, this all sounds amazing. And even to the point about the scars with the slight tension, something that I learned in yoga was about fascia. So like that little, I guess it's above the muscle, but below the skin. And if it's tense in one area, it can have you imbalanced in other ways. And we get kind of confused about that as well.
Absolutely. And that will have an influence on someone's overall autonomic tone, which therefore affects their arousal, or it affects their fertility. It affects their ability to orgasm. These things, they're far more influential than anyone has been led to believe. And it's worth educating yourself and starting to open your mind to it and tinkering with it. Scar tissue it's insidious, really. Less is more with scar tissue. Anybody getting tattoos and piercings for fun, reconsider. Learn techniques that help you normalize the tissue under your skin after you do it, because it's scar tissue. It's beautiful scar tissue.
Interesting, actually, about that, because I think that people don't understand that this is also fairly new, I guess, when it comes to tattoos for me as well, of understanding that even that is a scar tissue and you're just kind of doing it to yourself.
Well, yeah, you just described a little bit of how, where the fascia is and what it's doing, and it's between the skin and the muscle. It does wrap every muscle. It wraps every bone and nerve and organ, and it's under the skin. All these layers are supposed to glide and slide over each other in four dimensions, up and down and laterally. Anything that causes a restriction in that flow and that excursion leaves you tight. If I puncture an area this big on your back, on your spine, perhaps, because that's a favorite target for tattoos, with 10,000 puncture wounds, is that going to improve or inhibit fascial movement on your spine there? Is it going to reduce or increase your stress level? Is it going to increase or reduce nerve conduction there, or lymphatic flow, or microcirculation?
Well, lymphatic flow is something that definitely I've recently been researching into, and that's something that we don't know about our drainage systems at all, and just the ability of movement of pushing that. And all of these things, they seem so obvious when you read about it, almost too obvious in a way. Yeah. And then, but it's just something that's really not talked about. And just to loop back to the tattoos, now, would you have any advice for somebody who does have a lot of tattoos and something they'd be able to ease that movement and smoothness? Or is that something like once you get a tattoo, the damage is kind of there?
No, it's, I mean, people can go through their whole life accumulating tattoos, be covered in tattoos. I'm not saying it's the end or it's going to cause this or that, but it's not an upgrade for your self-regulation system inside. It doesn't enhance any of those critical functions, nerve conduction, blood microcirculation, lymphatic flow. It doesn't upgrade any of those things. What would I do if I was covered in tattoos? I'd probably get a lot of Rolfing done. I would get, I don't know if you know what Rolfing is.
No, I was going to ask you what Rolfing is.
Aggressive myofascial release. They will literally take your skin from the surface, try to release as much of the restrictions under the skin as possible, and it can be uncomfortable. But that's what I would, one of the things I would do. I would use these devices to release the tattoos as I get them, or start working on them. You know, I have a lot of clients who are like, you know, they might have sleeves on their arms, and it can be a little time consuming, but they realize it releases tension that they weren't aware they were holding until after it's done. Suddenly they're aware, or they have better proprioception in their arms and hands, or they have less tennis elbow after we do it, or whatever it is.
Now, Rolfing, would that just be like you're pulling up on the skin just for a little bit?
Lots of that, yeah.
Okay.
Lots of that, very highly trained professionals doing it to figure out where you need it most. And usually, however, a full Rolfing session is like 5 to 10 treatments, and it's intense and fairly expensive because it's hard work. But it's worth doing because if you've done yoga, you know the value of being less fascially restricted, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of priceless. You don't realize how much you needed it until after the class. A lot of therapies are like that, right?
I was going to say, well, it seems like with a lot of these things, you seem like we go under the radar a little bit when it comes to this. And then all of a sudden we get to like, we get older and it just hits us like a on wave of all of these problems.
It's the second half of life. It's I just realized working with clients, we you know, no one's perfect. The first half of our life, it doesn't really matter what you do with your body. You're going to wake up and you're going to be okay. Eventually, all of a sudden, it's not like that. So the way I see it is we accumulate stress and scars and injuries, and eventually we lose this ability to shift gracefully back and forth without any effort between the stress system and the self-healing system. We end up like this, stuck in high stress. The self-healing system is inhibited, therefore, so underactive. And what you can expect if that happens is less efficient digestion, higher blood pressure, higher muscle tone, more chronic pain, worse sleep, less fertility and arousal, more inflammation. There's quite a list of things you can expect. There's quite a list of systems that are regulated by the vagus nerve. And, you know, it's worth learning about it. It's worth tinkering with it. And, that, you know, that's why I was kind of interested in what you do using kink, using arousal, using sexual play as therapy.
Mm-hmm.
That can be effective in achieving self-regulation for people because it's therapeutic.
Well, even I was thinking about the Rolfing and just pulling in things, and I'm thinking of specific like BDSM and kink activities that are a little bit more hands-on and more rough. And it really is getting like, you really are pulling on the skin. And I think people don't understand or maybe not realize how important that is of just releasing those inside tensions. And I'm very interested in looking into this, and I'm definitely going to be looking up Rolfing after this.
Yeah, you should. It's, you might find that fascinating. It's fascially fascinating. It might be the most aggressive direct fascial modality out there. But yeah, I think it's fascinating that touch causes stress. So let that sink in. Touch causes stress. If touch causes stress, why is massage therapy a profession? Why does it survive? Why does it persist? If touch causes stress, why is foreplay light touching? It's this duality we have to figure out and accept. It might not be as prescriptive as we like. It might not be as black and white and easy to understand as we like, but there is some you know, beautiful, mysterious balance between touch causing stress, but touch causing arousal. Touch could be threatening, touch could be relieving. It's supposed to be both. We're supposed to be able to play with both. Some of us might like to play with deep, heavy, surprising, almost pseudo-threatening threat level pressure, as long as we know it's a safe, controlled environment before it starts.
Yeah, I think it's the mindset as well, what you walk into it with.
Actually, the absolutely the context and the mindset. Absolutely. It's absolutely controlled by that. You change a couple of those, you know, details, and it's a completely different experience. But it's, you know, it's pretty fascinating when you think of it that way and think of how some people's kinks and fetishes unfold.
And you know what? And this is what I always say. It doesn't always have to make sense to everybody, as long as it makes sense to you. And I definitely don't believe that healing, I've said this so many times, but healing is not soft and cuddly. A lot of the times it actually can be rough. It can be exhausting. It can be, you know, you're crying or you're sweating through it. Like, some of the harshest things that we have to go through are quite painful, but at the end of it, you have that relaxation moment of, oh, I got through it. The weight is lifted off of my shoulders.
That's what it is. You expose yourself to a stress, and as long as it's safe exposure, you can come out of it empowered. You can come out of it relieved. You can come out of it with a catharsis.
Yes.
It's totally possible.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and explaining more about vagus nerve and its importance, because this is unbelievable. And you've given so many tips on how to regulate it, and definitely things for my listeners to go venture in and do their own research and see what they come out and see what they can see.
I hope so. I hope they have fun doing it, and I hope they feel better for it. And I really appreciate your interest in it. It's refreshing, because a lot of the times we do outreach like this and we talk about what we do, and it's an uphill battle. And it's just refreshing to meet somebody who's just as curious and excited about it as we are.
Well, thank you so much. Where can my listeners find you?
I'm in Toronto half the week. I'm in Hamilton the other half the week. I work in physiotherapy clinics, and I work freelance.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I will put all your contact information in the podcast description. And for my listeners, you guys know what to do. I'll see you on Wednesday. Stay kinky.
Bye, Dana.